Real gift to us is our friend Kaylee. I remember when we started this group 22 years ago that in our visioning we talked about bringing along the leaders of the next generation. And it's been such a gift that we've had young leaders who've come through, who've been willing to share with us and speak to us and be part of our group. And certainly, Kaylee is like the ultimate young person, youngest person that I've met who was this connected and brilliant and studied in metaphysics that could talk at the level that she speaks to and inspire us all. So I give thanks for Kaylee's being part of our group, and I look forward to what she's going to share with us today. Here's Kaylee.
Amen, amen,
You guys are so sweet. Thank you. Thank you for that really, really, really lovely introduction, Connie. That was very kind of you. Today I'm here to talk about a very simple topic, practical transcendentalism. It was funny, I was talking to my parents about this. And they looked at me and they were like, "What?" Well, okay, so here's the thing. Okay, so let me just start with like a broad definition of transcendentalism. If you're familiar with American literature, it was a literary and philosophical movement that started in, I think, like the 1830s. And it was encouraged and thought about and mused upon by authors such as Ralph Waldo Emerson, Henry David Thoreau, Walt Whitman, etc. And so if you're a literature nerd, you're probably familiar with it in that regard. Leaves of Grass, Walt Whitman's Free Verse, a volume of poetry, Walden, Henry David Thoreau's seminal piece on meditation and natural living. And so my mom is a literature nerd, so she at least was like, "Okay, transcendentalism. I actually really like that." Like, one of her favorite books is Walden Pond, I think, is the formal name. But my dad is like, "What?" And so I, it was kind of nice to just go to like the roots of like explaining and thinking about how to really define it, and then apply it to our belief system. And so basically, transcendentalism is the belief, very basically, that there's an inherent innate goodness and God self within each human being, and that it's best expressed and explored through nature and a discarding, not necessarily discarding, but like a sort of turning your nose up and vowing off as much as possible modern society and empirical thinking, right? So you keep in mind that this sort of came about during the Industrial Revolution, right? So you had literal moths changing color because the coal smoke. You had kids as young as 3 or 4 working in factories. So there was an element of, rightly so, disillusionment and disgust with modern society and full empiricism. And it was interesting. I don't quite remember what I was listening to. It might have been a podcast, but one of the hosts said something like, "It's interesting how humanity and human thinking have sort of come full circle on itself, right? So we started out as like all these people who believed like, the sun was a god, and you had to sacrifice to the god to make sure that you got rain the next day, or that it opened up the next morning." And that we went from sort of that society to, "Oh, science can solve everything," to now a religion of science and a cult of science, I would say. I think that, again, like Holmes himself says in here, if something is good and something is helpful, absolutely love it, accept it. But he even says in here, you know, to an extent, there's something that's like a cult of science, right? Where like all you believe in is hard science and empiricism. And I was thinking about it, and I was like, we have people like Dr. Carolyn, you know, who have studied their and put a lot of their life into science, but she has an element to her where she has an open mind, and like she studies these things and is willing to thought think and live with these things. And I think that's a real blessing, because I think there's a lot of people, you know, in the modern day that I work with and that I've been introduced to and that I went to school with, who just are pure empiricists, right? If you can't see it, if you can't measure it, it's not real. And so there's an element in transcendentalism of rejecting that. And so with that definition of transcendentalism, I wanted to kind of explore Holmes's relationship with the transcendentalists, and I actually found a quote from him, where he said reading Emerson is like drinking water for him, which I thought was a really beautiful discussion, and a way of describing a love for a writer. And so I was like, wow, this is really something that was key to him and his philosophy. And then I started reading the chapter, and I'm not sure. So my version's a Kindle version. I'm looking down at my phone. And I don't know if your all's version has editor's notes, but this talk was given shortly before he transitioned, right? Like he passed on. And it was interesting because he made notes before this talk about like his goals, right? And like they were simple. The first two were simple. It was like create the new church, dedicate the organ to his wife. And then the third one was like, correct the thinking of everyone in the movement. And it was like, okay, wow, okay, that's broad. And so as I was reading this, I would describe it as like, frankly, there were a couple of points where I was like, wow, he is really getting feisty in it. And if you come at it as from he was trying to correct a lot of what he considered incorrect thinking, then you would sort of understand why he has this feistiness in him. So I just kind of kept that in mind as I was reading this and taking some like notes and pointing out some quotes, because I was like, there's an energy here that I normally don't see with Holmes, which is like not an anger, but like a he had said to this person in the editor's notes that like he knew he was ready to move on, right? He was ready to transition. So if you think of it as like someone kind of lit a fire under his butt, there's an energy to this chapter that I feel like isn't in previous pieces of his. So that was interesting. So the first few pages, he really talks about how, and I really love this because he's very, it shows how open-minded a lot of people in divine science and new thought are. He's like, there are a lot of different definitions of philosophy. There are a lot of different discussions of what people think is right. There are a lot of brilliant teachers out there. He's like Kant, Immanuel Kant, Spinoza, Eckhart Tolle. Like, there's a lot of like brilliant Emerson, he quotes, you know, like there's a lot of brilliant thinkers, and they all have a lot of different versions of truth. And he specifically mentions, gosh, the brilliant female writer, Emma Curtis Hopkins, who he says is like the whole start of the whole unity kind of divine Christian science movement. I believe she was the one who like coined the phrase. And he really is a fan of her. But he's like, there are so many different beautiful belief systems and people who think that this truth is the truth. And he essentially says, they're all right? So he talks about the ability, like I said, he kind of gets feisty. He's like, the ability of people to think. And he says, I think a lot of people in the average day and age, and remember, he gave this talk in 59, right? So they don't have the ability to think and really think about philosophy and sit and muse upon these ideas. He's like, it takes a certain soul and a certain kind of person to really think about these things. But the truth that does come out of the thinking, it's not necessarily wrong or right. It's all from source. It's all from God. And he talks about how there's an interesting concept of like, he's like, you know, you'll introduce yourself and you'll meet people who are void. And he's like, and you kind of just have to let those people go, because they're just like, you can't fill something that's empty at that stage of the soul. And he says, and then you'll meet people who have a beautiful soul, that maybe have like barnacles stuck to them from the material world. And he's like, you can clean that up and work with the soul. And he said, so you'll meet different kinds of people. Some people will be more open to philosophy and these ways of thoughts. And then you'll meet someone who really just is very closed-minded, and you have to step back and say that's their journey. And he said, but God and knowledge, to those who are willing to listen and study, will express itself. And he talks about how he went to a rabbi's sort of study session, like a seminar, and someone asked him, like he was speaking on the Ark of the Covenant, and someone came up to him afterward and was like, how do you know so much? And he's like, I'm not Jewish. And they're like, well, how do you know so much? And he's like, I study books because, again, God expresses itself through so many different people, many different belief systems, and all of them have a grain of truth. No one's wrong, no one's right. And it's interesting because he talks also about psychic concepts and God speaking, and the whole the allegory of Moses speaking to the burning bush. And this is interesting because it ties back to transcendentalism, because if you study the transcendentalists, again, Walden Pond, Thoreau believed you isolate yourself in nature and nature will speak to you. And so Holmes is like, I'm not surprised that they wrote a story where Moses talked to a burning bush, because everything has a spirit within it and God expresses itself through everything. And the transcendentalist really kind of came up with this coined phrase of transcendentalism, after studying Buddhism, after studying the Bhagavad Gita, and the Indian belief systems. So they drew from other truths and other philosophies. And so Holmes is like, there's nothing wrong with the grandeur of everyone sitting down and mulling about things. He does say, there is some subjective energy that isn't great, and you can sort of put that aside. You have to kind of filter what comes through. And he says, because sort of like Dr. Joseph Murphy uses the example of like striking a particular chord or striking a particular piece of music, the infinite might come through someone differently than it comes through someone else. He says, people choose to listen, but how they choose to listen is different. He said, so you're going to get a lot of different subjective truths and beliefs, and it's just people's different processing of the infinite and of God. And then he talks about, how this is leading to a constant, beautiful evolution. And I thought that was a really nice nod to modern science, because, he just talked about rejecting empiricism and how the transcendentalists believe that, but he still says, science has its beautiful place. He talks about psychiatry. He says, I think psychiatry is awesome. I believe in it. And, there's nothing wrong with it. And he said, but I always think that a psychiatrist should have an element of spirituality. Otherwise, it's really no help, because at our core, we're spiritual parts of the infinite. And he talks about how the infinite is constantly calling to us and inspiring us to evolve and to grow and to listen, and to listen the way we want, listen the way our soul wants us to listen, and take inspiration that way. And he talks about how the tree of life is often a really great esoteric example of this. There's a push and a pull. There's a pull toward our inner selves and our inner part of the infinite and our God self. And how we really, to be healthy and strong, we have to acknowledge that God self, and we have to acknowledge that part of us that's infinite connected to it. And then there's also a push, that's a push outward of using that knowledge and strength and power that we acknowledge within us, and then using it to grow and create beautiful new things and create new philosophies and ways of thought. And so there's a beautiful push-pull, he said, that you don't have to ever fight against. Just acknowledge that it's there, acknowledging the inner self, acknowledging God self, and then using that God self to pull outward and create beauty from within. He kind of, like I said, he gets feisty here. Like, and then I like highlighted a point where he talks about the virgin birth and the immaculate conception, which don't mean anything to anyone who has any sense. Like, okay, like he was like, come on, people. He talks about how the Bible is an allegory, which a lot of the great thinkers, Joseph Murphy, Neville Goddard, they say that essentially. You know, Murphy was a freaking. Studying to be a freaking in a monastery, you know, and he was like, the Bible's an allegory, which is why he ended up leaving the Catholic Church, because he didn't agree with, you know, their dogma, which is fine, you know, to each his own. And so then Holmes talks about, you know, the allegories and this push and pull and this acknowledgement of God's self, and he talks about the story of Lucifer. Which is, if you're not familiar with the Christian belief system, Lucifer was the most beautiful angel in heaven. And then he got cocky and said, I'm smarter and better than God. And God got mad and threw him out. And as he fell down to earth, he took one third or something of the angels with him who agreed with him. And then they were sent down to hell to tempt humanity for eternity, or at least until the rapture and Christ's second coming. Okay. So that's traditional Christianity dogma, to each his own. But he says, Holmes says, that's not like a true story. There was never actually Lucifer. There was never Adam. There was never Eve. There was never a Garden of Eden. It's all an allegory, right? It's this element of humanity discovering within them, holy crap, I have all this knowledge and this God self within me. I have a literal direct connection to God. Holy crap, I'm a lot more powerful than our society says I am. And he actually quotes something. He says, something like, when humanity was evolving, you know, man stood up and said, I am not my environment. And so it's this element of enlightenment within us of I am not my environment telling me that I am only a physical being. I am not my environment telling me that I am out of control of everything in my life, that I'm out of control of what's going on in the world, that I make no contribution whatsoever. I am not that. In fact, I'm a part of God's self. And I'm an expression of God being made human. And that's a realization. That's an enlightenment. That's what Lucifer was, coming down to earth and realizing truth. That's what eating from the tree of life and knowledge was. It's this realization of God's self and God's spark within yourself. And then what you do is you go to the equal push and pull, and you take that knowledge and you take that wisdom and you use it to create beauty and goodness, right? And he quotes a couple people, but I just love when he quotes Jesus, because I personally, you know, I did come from a Christian background, but I believe, and he does say in here that Jesus was like, you know, he really recognized God's self, and the examples and the miracles he created were Jesus deciding in that moment, I need to show them some examples, so let's do it. So I love when he quotes Jesus here, because he says, so remember here, we're taking this whole concept of there's godness and there's goodness and there's God's self and spark within each of us. And we then take that and we use it and we create something with it. So Jesus said, you know, who hath seen me hath seen the Father. Okay, so you look into the mirror and you're looking at God. You're looking at an expression of God. The Father and I are one. God is within me. I can draw on God's self. Yet the Father is greater than I. I've used this example before. We're each like a beautiful, unique snowflake with beauty and the power of snow and all within itself, within ourselves. But we come from a greater snow cloud, right? So there's this beautiful, infinite cosmos and love and creation and knowledge of all things. Infinite. He mentions Einstein again, who again was all into the whole concept of, and he says here, and so in here, time doesn't exist. So there's everything all the time, everything all at once, like that movie that came out, everything everywhere all at once, all knowledge, all beauty, all answers, God, and then we're expressions of that. So we have God within ourself, but it's a comfort, because if something gets too overwhelming, we can say, okay, I can go to God. You know, I can go to something greater, this beauty within me that is connected to the infinite, and it can manifest through me, and we can draw from it. So Jesus basically summarizes the whole concept there. Who hath seen me hath seen the Father. The Father and I are one, yet the Father is greater than I. And then Holmes talks about in the next, conversation, the next paragraph, the divine spark is in us. Truth and reality comes through us when we realize, quote unquote, I'm not my environment. And then I thought this quote was really beautiful. He says, and how people describe this in their different philosophies and their different belief systems. He says, the poetry of each in his own tongue is so beautiful. And so people have interpreted this truth in many different ways. Some with more beauty and kindness than others. And Holmes says, but it's quite beautiful to watch how people choose to translate this through the years. And then he gets into the concept of beauty and Emerson talking about the ineffability of nature and how it's beautiful. And he talks about the power and presence of God's self and how it can never be stopped. There's a quote here that I highlighted. It's God and creation is an irresistible force backed up by an immutable will existing in the consciousness of an infinite something that knows nothing but itself. Okay, so let's simplify that. Again, we're going back to the concept of God and something that is all that is, all that is good. That energy and that entity, if you want to call it that essence, I like that essence has to create. Its nature is to create and grow. And all it knows is itself and that it has to expand and grow. And that's a beautiful thing. And then he talks about how it's a calling for us to use this power, use this energy. And he talks, it's interesting, he talks about the concept of like being saved and how being saved is really just using the God power within us. We're saved only by using the power. And then he has a funny quote here that I like, where it's, continuing to acknowledge within ourselves this power. I'm not a dog, I'm not a cat. I don't know what I am, but I'm something. And we are still saying that. And it's a recognition every day of sitting up and waking up and looking at yourself in the mirror and saying, I'm more than just this body. I'm more than just this job. I'm more than just this bill that's past due. I'm more than just having to plan this dinner party that's coming up. I am something great and good in every morning, acknowledging that. And then from that, we continue to evolve and create these beautiful ideas. And then he uses more examples, the fourth kingdom, the fifth kingdom from Troward, Jesus, Buddha, Nirvana, etc. There's a lot of different ways, again, that things are described and called. And then he talks again about listening and how each person listens differently and how we have to make an effort each morning to acknowledge that God within ourselves and then be willing to listen. And he talks about the law. I'm just kind of going through my notes here. He's going through the law and order. He talks about how we believe certain things, but then he talks about how he's seen things go through walls. Dr. Joseph Murphy speaks about how he's witnessed apparitions of people. There's a lot more than just our physical 3D laws and world, and how the law of God is greater and the greatest essence of all. And so that's the one law that will happen within the true realm and law and order. And I loved the next thing he talks about, which is how, again, he reiterates that everything is a part of the whole. So he's had people come up to him and say, can I quote you? And he says, no, don't quote it. If it's true, it doesn't belong to me. And if it isn't, you shouldn't be repeating it. Who owns beauty? Can truth belong to anyone? And that's what he's saying. You can't own God. God is a part of all of us. God is a gift for each of us. Each of us, every single day, needs to wake up, look in the mirror, say, I am more than this. I invite the God self within me to express itself. God is everything, he says, and we can use this power and this beauty within each of us every day and say, I'm listening, God. I'm listening. And I'm listening the way I listen. So let me translate your truth and beauty within myself, the way you want me to translate it through my own specific eyes and my own specific example. And then he talks about how everything changes. We don't have an atom in our body. So he's like, some people worry that the past is part of them. And, I myself sort of suffer from a sadness of nostalgia, of wishing some things could be different. And He's like, nothing's ever the same. You look at a photograph of someone and that's a beautiful memory, but that person doesn't exist anymore because energy is constantly moving. The only thing, and he says, change, there's no permanency but change. And what you just have to realize is that you have beauty within yourself. There's constant moving energy. You acknowledge it, you listen to it, and it's going to be different each day. It's going to be different for each situation. But you have to give yourself a lot more credit than I think we give ourselves credit for. We have to give ourselves a lot more power than on average we give ourselves energy and power. He says, you're the only great person you'll ever meet. You're the only soul you'll ever know. Within you is the only God you will ever contact. We're all together and we're all one, but we're all experiencing this world from our particular 3D example. So that's why you get up every day and you say, God, I'm listening and let me interpret truth how I see it and how my goggles and vision and ears are going to interpret it. Because each of us provides a beautiful example, unique to ourselves when we tap into this God self. And then he has a beautiful quote here where he talks about it and using God self and essence and acknowledging it and using it. And making that commitment every day as we stand up and spending more time in nature and saying, God, I'm listening, really making that effort to listen. And he says, that which has endowed us with it, God, it shall again give back on the same circuit that will further accentuate the essence of our own being. Energy moves and moves and moves, and we listen, and it comes out different every day. Further accentuate the essence of our own being until finally, looking up, we see God only. And I thought that was beautiful. And so, again, wake up every morning, look at yourself, acknowledge the God self, say, I'm listening. Be open to the different ways it's going to show up. Maybe it's not going to be as dramatic as Moses' burning bush. It could just be Walt Whitman sitting on a field and writing about the blades of grass, right? Like, some days God is quiet, some days God is loud. And each day it's going to be a different interpretation for each of us. Because we're each experiencing this world in our own different way. And energy, it's constantly moving and evolving, and there's constantly a something that we can hook on to or learn from and open our minds to. And I think that's something really beautiful. And Holmes is saying every time you do that, you look up and you see God and you get a little bit closer to God's self. And it's quite powerful that, I think a little bit less than a year after this, he did make his transition and he finally did look up and see God only. And I thought it was a really beautiful chapter. I think that he called some things out. He was a little bit feisty with the whole, the Bible's an allegory, and don't declare something as the only truth, and be smart enough to actually have thoughts and be willing and be open-minded enough and don't be a void of a human. We had some feistiness here, but I want to end with, again, I find things in my life that fit with what I'm learning or reading. Okay, so I found a Jung quote. Carl Jung, the psychiatrist. And interesting, again, he mentioned psychiatry a couple times in this chapter, and how a psychiatrist should be spiritual. And if you're not familiar with Jung, he and Freud studied together and then had a very, very much strong parting of the ways. And I think that's due to, I think Freud went very physical and empirical. He also got hooked on cocaine, which is not great. And then Jung went much more spiritual and went into the archetypes and the Red Journal. And anyway, I think Jung sort of went more our direction. And so, keeping in mind this concept of the self and how God's self is within us and how it's really a duty for us to take the extra effort every day and listen to God and put the extra mind work into it and expressing God within ourselves. Jung says, there is only one way, and that is your way. There is only one salvation, and that is your salvation. Where are you looking around for help? Do you believe that help will come from outside? What is to come is created in you and from you. Hence, look into yourself. Do not compare. Do not measure. No other way is like yours. All other ways deceive and tempt you. You must fulfill the way that is in you. And again, that expresses to, we each have our own different interpretation of what we're listening to from God, and it can be a really beautiful thing. And I hope this chapter made sense. And I hope that I made some sense and I'm some points connected. I recommend, if you all want to read more, definitely check out excerpts from Walden, Thoreau. Check out some of Emerson's essays in particular. His poetry is beautiful, but he really gets into the thick of it, like in his essays. So check out some of Emerson's essays. And if you're a fan of poetry, definitely look at Whitman's Blades of Grass. It is very much free verse, free form, sort of God coming through him very openly. So I do recommend you check out the Transcendentalists if you can. Great writers. And I hope you enjoy. Thank you so much.
Kaylee.
Excellent, Kaylee.